This episode sponsored by Good Ranchers. Good Ranchers delivers 100% American meat straight to your door. Every cut is sourced from local U.S. farms and ranches, and the entire packaging and fulfillment process takes place right here in America before it's delivered to your doorstep. No imports, ever. Just high-quality, 100% American beef, chicken, pork, and wild-caught seafood. I'm a subscriber, and my plan is incredibly easy to manage. Traveling? Need to skip a delivery? You can pause, move, or adjust your order anytime in just a few clicks. Right now, when you start your plan, you'll get free meat in every box for life, plus $25 off your first order with code RANCH25. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use code RANCH25 to start your Good Ranchers plan today.
The road to pro wrestling Dontaku began with mostly inconsequential shows at Corrigan Hall this past week, but things are about to get busier. There are a lot of events, and there are two different shows featuring title matches as the company heads to the Southwest and heads toward the two-night event in Fukuoka Pro Wrestling Dontaku. Before we even get to that, though, we have a night of tag team championship matches. We have a junior heavyweight title defense. We're going to take a look at those and talk about the rest of the world in wrestling, since it was a fairly eventful one in terms of other promotions anyway, even if things were pretty quiet on the New Japan front. So we have some previews, and we'll study the state of the business. With Jeremy Finestone, I'm Stephen Conway. This is Speaking of Strong Style. Welcome, everyone, to Speaking of Strong Style, where we discuss the news, issues, and events surrounding New Japan Pro Wrestling. We had events, but I can't say we had a whole lot of news or issues this week, Jeremy. Fairly quiet on the New Japan front. The two shows at Korakuen will recap very, very briefly, but my mind was on other things most of this week, and New Japan didn't do anything to distract me from those other things. So we have some stuff coming up, though. We have some interesting stuff coming up. How did you spend your WrestleMania weekend and everything else that happened in American wrestling this past week?
I didn't watch any wrestling until Saturday, in which I watched WrestleMania, and then I podcasted for 2 hours. And then I watched New Japan on Sunday morning, and then I watched more WrestleMania, and then I watched more New Japan on Monday morning. And just a lot of wrestling. Mostly all inconsequential, really, with a couple of matches here or there that I watched that feel are going to maybe stand, I don't know, the test of time. But yeah, I felt like the New Japan shows, if we got better shows, Steven, maybe Bushiroad wouldn't be borrowing millions of dollars.
Well, we're going to talk about that in just a moment, because there was a financial development with Bushiroad that has everybody looking a little crossways at things right now. So Jeremy Orr is here, and he asked about it. Hey, Jeremy, we're going to talk about it in just a second. Colin is here. Colin says the Bloodsport, which is shutting down, apparently. Josh Barnett announced that was the final Bloodsport event. And he said Spark Joshi were the two best shows over Mania Week, in his opinion. Jeremy said CMLL was really good, and he thought that Stardom was the only good thing. I thought there were too many AEW people on the Stardom show, and that's something that tends to happen. They don't bring the whole crew for financial reasons and visa reasons. Remember, Maki Ito was supposed to be there, but things didn't quite come through for her. So a lot of times, Jeremy, when they're doing these shows around WrestleMania and in the same town as a major event, they supplement the roster with people that are in the States that have worked with them before, people that are already in town working other shows, and they bring them in. So it tends to be a mishmash, doesn't it?
Yeah, it ends up being a little bit more of an exhibition than it does a consequential show. A lot of these, I won the gig on that years ago. I went to a Mania in Miami, the 28 one with Cena and Rock. And it was like, I went to a Dragon Gate USA show. And it's the first time I saw Johnny Gargano and Shingo Takagi and Cena and a couple of these other guys. And while the show was really good, in the grand scheme of whatever's happening in that promotion, it was more, we're going to show our stuff, rather than this is the next like important show for the people that follow the promotion. And that's basically what those collective shows are now. It's just, we're just gonna bring in all these people, and we hope that you pay money to come to our show because it's the coolest one of the shows. And from what I saw, they just kind of all cannibalized each other's audiences. Nobody really like killed it on these shows, and everybody got what they wanted out of it. You know what I mean? Like, if you wanted your stardom show, you got it to some extent, as Jeremy was saying, that, you know, a little bit tainted with the AEW people, but, you know, like, you need that pathway for some of these audience people to like, oh, who are these people? Oh, they're wrestling people I do know. This gives me the framework to be familiar with it. So I don't know. It always fascinates me that the indie crowd, like the indie promotions and all this stuff, congregate around these WWE shows, in which realistically those WWE fans are there for WWE stuff, and the percentage of other people that are there, like, there are hardcore wrestling fans, but now that we're in a world with AEW and a couple of these other promotions like TNA and, you know, MLW, where there's a little bit more of a presence in there in the world, you know, going, like, expecting to get all of that stuff when people just want WWE at WWE events, it makes it hard to succeed there.
Yeah, it was interesting when I was there for Wrestle Kingdom. You've been there for Wrestle Kingdom over in Tokyo. You tend to run into other foreign fans, people like us, Americans, Brits, Australians, and they're going to 5 shows that week. You know, they're not just going to Wrestle Kingdom. They are in Japan, right, and they are going to go to everything. It's not always the case with WWE. The folks kind of think WWE or bust. So, but still, those shows, they keep doing them. So I have to assume that the companies believe they're getting something out of doing those. So we'll see.
A big event comes an opportunity for more eyeballs, and I totally get that. People, this is the one time a year where people who aren't paying attention to anything other than WWE, you know, it's like the festival around the festival. Sometimes you just have people fall in and fall in love with these promotions.
Yeah. And I think that doing
it, but.
And then Jeremy Orr's question is, how does that get your people over or your promotion? And I think they're just hoping to get some fresh eyeballs, people that wouldn't normally see if they just, oh, there's a wrestling show here, I'll go check it out, and then become fans. That's what they're hoping for. I think that's what they're hoping for. And, you know,
it's
they
like
keep doing
it. Get Rob Van Dam on these shows or something like that, where it's just like this old WWE name. It's like, ooh, maybe we can go see someone that used to be in WWE for a significantly cheaper cost than it would to go to a WWE show when WWE is not actually on while we're here. And so that's the logic you start with, and then it just kind of snowballs into ambition and big shows that outgrow what they were intended to do.
And but like Bloodsport. Colin's mentioning that Natty versus Shayna on Bloodsport was nuts, but in a good way. And he said the only thing that annoyed him was at the GCW show, there were microphone issues the whole time that were never sorted out, which, yeah, that would be annoying.
The whole Bloodsport thing is weird to me, okay?
Because very weird.
It was never his Bloodsport. It was just his name on it.
Yeah.
You remember it was Matt Riddle's Bloodsport before it was ever Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, and right, it's run by Brett Lauderdale. So it could be whoever's Bloodsport they want it to be after that. So the whole Barnett, like, coming in saying that, like, we're shutting down Bloodsport, is like, are we though?
I guess they are for now. I doubt he wouldn't have gone on the microphone and said that unless that was the plan to shut things down.
Josh Barnett's Bloodsport is shutting down. Everyone else is like, it's not shutting down.
Yeah, it's. I guess he's not going to be involved with it anymore. Correct. So go figure.
And it's important, you know, like, he's a name and he got that promotion to be viable and visible for a few years there. So, you know, he deserves to say, like, hey, I'm walking away. Like, I'm, like, my time here is done. I've accomplished it. And getting more and more of a pain in the ass to book with WWE and AEW and all these other promotions, trying to do the shows that I want. And I'm done. That's basically what happened, even though he's not going to say it like that. But, like, read between the lines. The Bloodsport shows are getting harder and harder to book because the people that he wants talent from are getting harder and harder to negotiate with.
Yeah, we've seen that, and this isn't specific to WrestleMania weekend, but some of the shows that are matches that aren't allowed to happen because someone works with TNA, which works with WWE, so they're not going to be on a show with an AEW guy. And the politics is getting sticky, more sticky than it already was anyway. And that eventually some people are going to just throw up their hands and just say, "I did that. I'm not going to bother with this anymore."
So, I was we were on the Discord, and we were before Mania weekend, right? And I was talking with somebody else on our network about the MJF Dolph Ziggler or Nick Nemeth match that was going to happen up in New York on May 1st. And I'm like, I expect that match does not happen. And they're like, why would they care about MJF and Nemeth? It's like, because they're petty and they don't even want the sniff of a guy that used to work at WWE losing to a top guy in AEW. It just like, even if it matters not a whit at all, they don't want it. And later on that day, it was like it was done. And there's no other way of like to tell you, like, even like I felt bad with the "I told you so." You know what I mean? Like, it was so obvious that it was going to happen, and that like denying the reality that this isn't how these companies are behaving nowadays is just your reality is going to hit you in the face.
Brad is here. Good to see you, Brad. And Jeremy says, Jeremy Orr says, it becomes about the bigger name wrestlers is all. Well, it's always about the bigger name wrestlers. But what they're trying to do is get people in the door and then impress them with their regular crew. Hopefully, that's the goal. That's the goal.
If people who make you money, they don't want you to book the people that could possibly make them any more money than they're already making. And that's really all it is.
Yeah. But you know, there were some interesting things going on. I did see that. For all of the sports fans who are complaining about being inundated with WrestleMania, the people that, you know, I don't want angles going on in my sports shows and things. Nevertheless, the Brock Lesnar Obafemi thing was the highest rated hour of ESPN that whole weekend. So I don't think it's going to deter ESPN from doing more of this, but that was interesting anyway. The Obafemi Brock, that was the one thing on either night of WrestleMania that I was looking forward to seeing. They had me with that one. I was curious to see how that turned out. It turned out about what we thought. It was a Brock Lesnar style match. He put over Oba. It looks like he has retired. I thought it was fine. Oba looks like a star in all caps.
Sure.
This dude is, he's got it, whatever it is, doesn't he? It's not just his size. It's not just the facials. There is a charisma to that dude, and it looks like Brock enjoys it, and because he made the guy look like $1 zillion and threw this whole angle right there.
Yeah, I will say this. I was in Vegas last year, and I was coming out of the Wicked Spoon, and it's a really cool buffet that they have there. And
excellent choice.
I'm leaving, about 10 feet to the right of me, as we're like through the navigation of the halls and the casino that it's in, I see Obafemi. And he's trying to find the entrance to the Wicked Spoon. And I'm kind of debating whether I say something. I end up not saying anything at all. Just let him deal with the thing. He's with the lady and whatever. I just looked at this dude and I'm just like, you are something special. Just in person, in the middle of like this casino crowd. You are something special, and I am going to just sidestep all the Brock stuff and say that there were a lot of ways that they could fuck up that match and really screw everything up, and they didn't. Like, they managed to make a star out of Obafemi and leverage their way out of having to use Brock in a way that's problematic for a ton of people, and I can breathe a little easier knowing that, like, there's a new guy on top, you know, there's a new next big thing, all of these things. I hope Obafemi does not turn out to be an awful human being, but right now I am just happy that A, they didn't fuck it up, and B, it's the right guy for the right time.
And Brad mentions here, the Stardom show was very, very fun. Athena and Rhea delivered big time. Unfortunately, Rhea got hurt coming out of that match. And then she wrestled today at Korakuen, so I think she's relatively all right. And then he also mentions, as much as I hate and despise WWE, every clip of Oba I see on social media makes me want to see him on a show for a company I actually watch.
Special. Like, I get what Brad's saying. Like, if he, if he were elsewhere and they were able to like do something with him, he just like he's just special. Like he exudes something that, you know, you want to see out of the big pro wrestlers. Like, I know that we have like smaller pro wrestlers with great physiques that fly and jump around and all that stuff, but sometimes you just want the biggest, meatiest guys like standing on top of a pile of bodies and say, "I'm the champion."
It's supposed to be a variety show. I say this over and over again. Wrestling is supposed to be a variety show. The matches are each supposed to look different. It's one of the more frustrating things about some promotions is that everything tends to look like you just watch seven of the same match over and over again. And some of these New Japan house shows feel that way sometimes, where I just watch, sometimes it's an eight man, sometimes it's a six man, but it's pretty much the same thing. And, you know, at least with this, he does give you a different dimension. But you were talking about how he just had this star quality. I'll tell you what, when I was in Las Vegas again,
sure,
they had, New Japan had a show. It was Henare and Shingo for the Never Openweight title and a few other things. It was at Sam's Town. So not on the strip, not downtown, kind of off. It's considered a locals type of casino, but a nice one. It's nothing wrong with it. That's where the show was. And afterwards, Ginger and I were there, my partner, and we went and got food at the food hall down there. She and I were just sitting there getting some tacos or something from the little food court they had. And a lot of the wrestlers came through because that was on the way to the elevators or whatever. And as we were finishing our meals, Julia came back downstairs. She had been on the show and she was in street clothes at that point. She was out of her gear and just walking through the casino, and she was just to head out. And if you had no idea about pro wrestling or what pro wrestling was, and a lot of the people at the casino that night probably didn't, the ones that are just playing slots or blackjack, I swear to you, if you looked up, you would just think she's in a show somewhere. She's the star of something. You might not even know it's wrestling, but there was just something about her walking through there. There was the charisma is a very real intangible, but it absolutely exists in this business. And Obafemi has it. Julia had it, where you just kind of stop and look and go, "Who is that? That's somebody. I feel like I should know who that is," even if you're not a wrestling fan. And Oba probably has that. It doesn't hurt that the guy's 6'4" or 6'5" or something. You know, he's an enormous person. Julia is not an enormous person, but that charisma still kind of shines through. Even outside the context of wrestling, she looks like the star or something. It's unexplainable. Not everybody has it, and those folks do.
So I didn't clue you in on this, but there was something else that I did this past couple of days that is wrestling related that I'm going to spring on you, because look, to be honest, there's not a whole lot of New Japan to talk about this week, with what we watched being about 5 minutes worth of discussion and what we're previewing being about 15 more. We're going to stretch this out a little bit.
But there are other things going on. What's up?
I'm a giant nerd, and I forgot that I have my own wrestling podcast. So I realized that I had a book that I read, a comic book, actually, that had been sitting on my pile that I finally read yesterday. Steven, it is called AEW versus DC, which is a bunch of AEW wrestlers in comic book form teaming up with DC and AEW, like pairing up to collect a belt that Mercedes Moné had won, but her opponent, in the midst of her 14 or 15 title reign, she won this other cosmic belt, right?
Ripped from the headlines.
Cosmic belt. And her opponent angrily shattered the belt and sent it to all these different dimensions. So AEW wrestlers and DC heroes had to team up together to get this belt back.
You know, once again, this is just a ripoff of the Natsupoi Makihito storyline right now, where Natsupoi just the Kawhi of Kawhi belt. I'm telling you.
I 100% saw who's writing this, and I don't actually have the credits here, but I was reading, like, I'm actually legitimately impressed at the voices that they were able to do for AEW. Like, they actually just said things like Will Ospreay was saying bruv in the book and all this. Anyway, some choice moments in this thing before we move on include Batman teaming up with Darby Allin and constantly berating him for his death wish and telling him that he needs to approach life differently. That was number one. Hey. Number two was Wonder Woman and Willow Nightingale fighting undead Horg with swords, and me thinking, like, this is actually pretty cool. And if I were Willow Nightingale, I could die happy right now with a full panel, like, comic page of her battling, like, zombies with Wonder Woman. That's cool. The climax of the first issue becomes Mercedes Moné turning on all of AEW and teaming up with Lex Luthor to create their own super, like, super universe, whatever. And it requires Wonder Woman and a powered up Kenny Omega, who is channeling the new god's mother box to become the new god of pro wrestling, in which these two have to fight Lex Luthor and Mercedes Moné to regain the belt and restore order to the entire cosmos. Completely bonkers stuff. Two issues. You're in and you're out. It was dumber than I ever thought it could be, and I highly recommend it.
There's a lot there. But I mean, it is interesting that they did something like that. Yeah.
It was. It came out maybe 2 or 3, 4 months ago. It's clearly set towards the time where Mercedes Moné is a heel. Tony Storm is still around. Osprey and Nightwing, Batman, former sidekick Robin, who's his own hero now, they team up. Osprey freaks out Nightwing because he's going to give the guy, a League of Assassin member, a Tiger Driver, and Nightwing thinks he's going to kill the guy. And Osprey's like, no, I'm a master of precision. And slams him on the ground. And I'm just like, you know, they actually did a Tiger Driver in this comic, and I was not expecting a Tiger Driver to come up in this thing whatsoever. So if you are of that mind and sufficiently insane, I do think AEW and DC's two-part crossover is worth your time. Podcast, if we continue on with New Japan Pro Wrestling.
So, yeah, so we talked about that. All-Star Grand Queendom is coming up. That's a Bushiroad event, so therefore it's a little bit New Japan related. That's coming up this weekend. That's one of Stardom's biggest shows of the year. I'm always curious to see how that goes. I'm excited about it. We got Momo Watanabe back after a long absence due to injury. We got Saki Kashima's final match today. That was a sad moment there. Saki has always been a lot of fun. And I'll tell you one other thing, though, WWE related there, Jeremy. I was watching, you know, I'm a big CMLL fan, right?
Yes.
And I enjoy watching the Lucha stuff. And I have been hearing that good things were happening, and of all places, AAA wrestling. And it is booked by The Undertaker, Mark Calloway. He is booking AAA right now, which is kind of a mind blower. But, Jeremy, I watched the show that featured the confrontation between the original El Grande Americano and the current Grande Americano, which is a funny name, but Jeremy, this thing's over as hell. They've challenged each other to a mask versus match matches. Chad Gable and Ludwig Kaiser.
Yeah, it's like on the 30th of May. It's super hot. It's hotter than like a bunch of the crap on Mania.
And it was so well done. Like the fight they had to set up the challenge, the brawl looked fantastic. Both Kaiser and Gable did a wonderful job with this brawl. The rest of the show had Penta Cero Miedo against Vikingo, which was pretty good. A little wacky because it's Penta and Vikingo, who neither one of them can really control themselves. So that's something that you have to deal with in there. But otherwise, pretty entertaining. It's an hour show. It's on YouTube. Anyone can watch this stuff. And while it is done in Spanish, they have, I believe it's Rey Mysterio, if I recognize the voice, dubbing it over in English. If somebody gets on the microphone and does a promo in Spanish, I believe it's Rey, is dubbing it over in English. Corey Graves and trash bag John Layfield is doing the commentary, but what do you expect from Calloway?
He got help too. The guy from TNA that came over and helped Undertaker do that match with AJ Styles. He does all the I can't remember his name. Anyways, he I think his name starts with Jeremy too, actually.
I've been telling people over and over again.
Jeremy Borash. There it is.
Oh, Borash. Oh, Borash is in on it. Okay, well, there you go. I've been telling people, you know, like, there's a bit of a morass. There are a lot of people that aren't happy with American wrestling right now, whether it's just, and all that's subjective. If you are enjoying it, great. But I've had people ask, it's like, what do I do when I just don't like wrestling anymore? Mm-hmm. And I just say, go watch some CMLL right now. They're doing great. And then of all things, this 1 hour show, it's a nice tight 1 hour thing from not a huge time commitment. AAA is doing pretty well right now. So right now the Mexican stuff looking pretty good. So that was refreshing. I still think Stardom is good. I think the Joshi scene, the women's wrestling scene in Japan is very strong right now. I think there are five companies that are doing something interesting at the moment, and not that they're perfect, but they're good. And I think All-Star Grand Queendom is going to be a terrific show in ring. And so there are oases of pockets of goodness. You just have to seek it out.
All wrestling is equal, and not all wrestling is going to resonate with everybody. And I am fully an advocate of just walking away and turning off wrestling for a week or two and coming back and just, you know, letting it be away from your life. And if you need to catch up, great. But if you miss that week and you never watch it ever again, I promise you, most of the time, it'll be okay. And so,
Colin mentioned sign up to Wrestle Universe. You have all the wrestling you want on there. A lot of promotions on that thing. Worth the money.
I spent last week too just binge watching a bunch of shows that I'd like let go because, you know, once like the WWE stuff, I didn't really feel like watching a whole lot of other wrestling. There wasn't a whole lot of New Japan. You know, like, we have this week, we have maybe like one more week right after Dontaku or like that recap. And then after that, it's like Best of the Super Juniors. And every week we got stuff to talk about. Like, we're hot and heavy on New Japan. But just like right now, like, I am taking very much advantage of the time that I have that's not New Japan related to just not do wrestling stuff.
This episode sponsored by Hume Health. You ever wonder if your routine is actually working or if you're just hoping it is? The Hume Band gives you real answers. It tracks your body 24/7, heart rate, sleep stages, recovery, stress, even blood oxygen, so you can see exactly how your habits impact your health. Not just steps, real data. You'll start to notice patterns, like how a bad night of sleep affects your recovery or how stress is holding you back. And instead of guessing what to fix, the app gives you clear, personalized insights based on your data, so you can stop second-guessing and start making smarter decisions for your body. Visit HumeHealth.com to get the Hume Band today.
This episode sponsored by Good Ranchers. Good Ranchers delivers 100% American meat straight to your door. Every cut is sourced from local U.S. farms and ranches, and the entire packaging and fulfillment process takes place right here in America before it's delivered to your doorstep. No imports, ever. Just high quality, 100% American beef, chicken, pork, and wild-caught seafood. I'm a subscriber, and my plan is incredibly easy to manage. Traveling? Need to skip a delivery? You can pause, move, or adjust your order anytime in just a few clicks. Right now, when you start your plan, you'll get free meat in every box for life, plus $25 off your first order with code RANCH25. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use code RANCH25 to start your Good Ranchers plan today.
Well, that's about over with because New Japan's schedule is picking up big time. And unfortunately, yeah, TJPW, I guess, in Las Vegas wasn't very good. Both Jeremy Orr and Colin have said that. They put a lot of their eggs in that Sumo Hall basket. So between their Texas tour, which I got to see in person, and the Las Vegas show, they went back and ran Sumo Hall and drew pretty well and had a pretty good show. So it's right after a major event, and they're sort of getting things going again. And you know how it is when you have that big event where every title is on the line. Mm-hmm. Now it's more about establishing the next thing. And they're at the very bottom of the, they're in the valley They still have to climb the mountain to get it to peak again. But there, that Las Vegas show came right as they had kind of finished up a lot of stuff. You know, they were all the title matches. And so, yeah, it was not maybe TJPW's best stuff, but they had put their eggs in that Sumo Hall basket. I won't argue with that because they ended up drawing 3,000 to Sumo Hall, which is a really good crowd for them. But yeah, kind of left them with an empty gun. Not a whole lot left to shoot in Vegas.
Okay, so the best way I can put it is this. Beginning of the month, Callum Newman wins the title, okay? Middle of the month, MJF defends against, you know, Kenny Omega, and then drops the title to Darby Allin. Then, the week after, we have CM Punk dropping the title to Roman Reigns. These are all big things, and now we're followed by, like, then you're going to de-escalate and just kind of calm down. I'm cognizant of all these promotions. Like, these big things just happened. They're still, like, taking it. They're still moving. But, like, the huge moments, I'm not going to miss anything right now because they're still working off all these big things that they just did. These promotions don't do 500 big things in a row. This is, like, one big thing. You're going to sit on it. We're going to let it simmer. We're gonna digest it. And there are times where you can be like, okay, I can just not focus on this because they've laid their cards on the table. We know what the big story is right now.
Well, they tried to they debuted Sol Ruka on Raw and then tried to kill her the next night on NXT. Good job, Sean. But I don't know if you
Ethan
saw the
Page, Sol Ruka, Joe Henry, a bunch more people probably show up on SmackDown this next week.
Did you see the bump they had Sol Ruka? I did not love it,
and I did not want to watch it more than once.
What morons? what are you doing, you dipshit, Michaels?
I mean, these wrestlers to be stuntmen, not wrestlers, and it's fine.
That's an asinine bump. Okay, so let's get to this now. We mentioned very, very early in the show, there was some news that came out about Bushiroad. And that is, of course, the parent company of New Japan Pro Wrestling, the parent company of Stardom Pro Wrestling, World Wondering Stardom. They took out a huge loan. Now, this is not the wrestling companies. This is the parent company, Bushiroad. They, with a combination of banks, because it was such a massive loan, was it 10 billion yen? Now, that sounds like an enormous number. It is an enormous number. It comes out to about 63 million U.S. dollars, just to give you an area. It's a lot of money.
And
it is to help expand their core businesses. And so Bushiroad, their primary business is not pro wrestling. It's lovely. They've got two companies. Their main thing are those card collection games, right, Jeremy, and mobile phone games, which are a lot of times based on those types of card games. So you probably know more about this than I do.
They're inextricably tied with each other.
Yeah, but all those, we see all those card collection games, deck building games, all that kind of stuff. They don't do Pokemon, but stuff like that, right? That's the core business. It's been a struggle for Bushiroad lately, and they have taken out this huge loan. It should not affect the wrestling companies unless it fails to turn around the card business and the mobile phone game business. If that turns around, if they use this money wisely and get their business rolling again, shouldn't really affect the wrestling companies at all. The worry and what had everybody kind of given it the side eye, if it doesn't. If this doesn't work, and it's not going to happen tomorrow, we won't know even in a year. Stuff like this takes a long time. This is like turning around, you know, a battleship. It doesn't happen on a dime. But if it doesn't happen, now the company has $63 million more dollars in debt than it had last week. And the worry is, if you start to hear little corporate phrases like focusing on our core businesses, that's when for sale signs go up for wrestling companies, because that might be a way to raise some cash to help finance all these loans and pay back, make payments on these loans. And it is a little bit concerning when the parent company is struggling and you're not the core business, because sometimes you're what gets sold off to pay things down.
Yeah.
And so what would that mean? Well, there's no way of knowing. And again, we don't even know that it is going to happen. But companies that are thriving don't have to take out 10 billion yen loans with four or five different banks. That's not the sign of a particularly healthy multinational conglomerate. So we're keeping an eye on this. I'm a little uneasy reading the thing because it's just one of those deals where if they do sell it, who buys it? All speculation and completely useless at the moment. We'll jump off that bridge when we get to it. But
Japan being in a recession, probably not helping.
Not helping at all. And so
world market also not helping.
Long way to go. Yeah. Long way to go. But is it good news? Nope. Sure isn't. And considering the weakness of the yen, is it good news? Nope. Sure isn't. I mentioned to Jeremy that I was just looking at the exchange rate, and Japan is actually weaker against the dollar than it was when I went in January 2025 to Wrestle Kingdom, and it's weaker than when you went earlier this year. It's trending the wrong direction, which as a tourist, this is great news. Things are cheaper than they were 2 years ago and a lot cheaper than they were when I went in 2019. So as for tourism, that just means that more people flooding into Japan for tourism because it's great and it's a wonderful country full of wonderful people. But it also means that we're starting to crowd the locals a little bit, and it's caused some problems, especially in Kyoto, which has a lot of tourist stuff to look at, but doesn't have the size of Osaka and Tokyo to absorb it. These are all things that are domino effect on the economy, they're all factors, and everything's mixed together on this. But we're going to keep an eye on that. And what I would suggest everybody do is root for Bushiroad to turn business around. Just hope that this works. So hope that they have a good plan in place and that they'll take this loan and put it in the right spot and get things going again. It's a little uncomfortable.
I mean, we talked about it. I saw the news online, and then you reached out to me, I don't know, like Tuesday, like, oh, this is good. I'm like, yep, I saw that. And I was basically going to leave you with the analysis because my analysis on that is money good, no money bad is basically where I exist on this. But the only thing that I'll add to this is that a lot of people, the first like knee-jerk reaction to all this is, oh no, WWE might buy New Japan.
No,
there are many things that would have to happen in order for that to become the likeliest possibility. Farthest from my mind, including the fact that if any foreign company is going to be buying this, it's probably going to be Tony Khan rather than WWE.
No, I'm just saying,
in the list of improbables, that family is probably more likely to buy it than TKO.
Completely disagree.
They have enough money and capital to do it personally.
Completely disagree. No, okay. I don't think so. I'll explain why. First of all, neither one is likely at all.
Right.
The Japanese government works very hard to regulate things
Japanese companies within Japan.
They take it as their duty to attempt to protect Japanese jobs. And when a foreign company wants to buy a Japanese company, they rightfully and often correctly figure that all the redundancies are going to be in the Tokyo office. And that those are the people that are going to be laid off. So if a company based in London, company based in New York, buys a Japanese company, well, they don't need two marketing divisions. They don't necessarily need two R&D. You know, I'm just speaking in generalities. Which ones are they going to shut down? Well, probably the ones in Tokyo. You know, that's how this often goes. They try to protect those Japanese jobs, and they make it very difficult. Not impossible, because I'm sure people are probably looking up instances of foreign companies buying Japanese companies. It's difficult, not impossible, difficult. The reason I think that if WWE or Tony Khan, the issue is Tony Khan isn't really a company. It's a guy with his dad's money. So even though
that Tony Khan owns,
that is made up of a guy with his dad's money. It's not a real, like a corporation.
You gotta stop with that, man. He's actually a profitable businessman on his own.
If Japan looked at this and said, this is this guy's kid, he doesn't, he has a it's basically a really, really well-financed mom and pop thing. It's not a corporation. Which company is more likely to be there in 10 years holding on to Japanese jobs? The answer is WWE of the two. Because
that may be the case.
They're not going to. The point is, none of this is actually going to happen. They're not going. If they, if it gets sold, it's almost certainly going to be sold to something in Japan. But I agree. This whole idea that an American company is just going to swoop in and buy New Japan because they want to, it doesn't work like that. The way it works in the United States, the way WWE.
And Tony Khan doesn't even go to Japan for whatever reason. Is another reason to think that like that would be incredibly unlikely, because him not going to Japan in the first place is what caused all the issues with the AEW New Japan negotiations back in 2018 with the contracts and all that. So there's a whole lot of cart before the horse here. The only thing that I was saying was, if you took this as like this is the pathway for WWE to buy this company, I was trying to say, slow your roll.
Yes.
There are a number of things, and personally, if there was any company, I believe that the other one who worked with the company and put in a $7 billion bid for WWE when they were up, is a viable thing. It would probably have a higher bid than WWE, who would probably try and buy it for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, it's a lot more.
It's all speculative.
It's not an auction. There's a lot more to it than that with the Japanese regulations. 100%. So, and Brad is mentioning, will it be a thing where Tony helps fund NJPW to keep things afloat? Keep in mind, none of this has happened. Like Bushiroad hasn't had to
that
do
we know yet. Of.
Well, please. But the thing is, like the you know, if Bushiroad turns things around, everything's fine. It's just this weird little loan that comes out here where you're just thinking, oh boy, maybe they're struggling a little bit more than they had let on. So, and then Jeremy Orr asks, Wrestle Universe people become a Japanese WWE? There have been rumors that WWE wants to get into Japan, and they apparently went after Noah not too long ago, but were turned back. I don't think that even got to the point where they were asking the Japanese regulators if they could. I don't think that ever. I think just the NOAA people said no.
I think they were just trying to get a foot in the door somewhere, and they got their foot in the door, and they're like, yeah, that's all you're getting in the door, okay?
and I think they had designs on doing NXTs around the world, like NXT UK. I think they wanted to do an NXT Japan. AAA is kind of like a NXT Mexico to now, you know, but back then I think they had designs on kind of creating all these little developmental areas in all the wrestling cultures around the world. This is years ago. And we're poking around looking at NOAA thinking, well, maybe we could buy NOAA. And CyberFight, which is a pretty big, I think it's bigger than Bushiroad, which owns NOAA, DDT, and TJPW. Those are all CyberFight pro wrestling companies. And I think they just said, no, we don't need to sell. So we're not going to. And that didn't happen.
I do want to mention, I think on NXT, there was a segment backstage, as all NXT segments are wont to be shown on X or Twitter or Blue Sky or whatever it is, that one of the male wrestlers received a gift with Japanese calligraphy on top, signifying that someone from Japan is going to come and wrestle him sometime soon on NXT, which makes me think of Noah wrestler, but I have no idea what Noah wrestler that might be.
And who knows? And then Colin said, don't Abima have a deal with WWE? Yeah, but Abima can make deals with anybody he wants. There's nothing exclusive about those. So there's the exclusivity that we see frequently in the United States isn't as big a deal in Japan either. For instance, Murata-san, the announcer, he announces wrestling. He announces Stardom. He announces New Japan. He announces TJPW sometimes. He turns up for multiple promotions, not all of which are Bushiroad or even CyberFight.
They're kind of like blood feuds between the promotion and Japan.
Yeah, and Brad mentions that could be either Evil or Hiromu. Also, Jeremy, keep in mind.
Ooh, I like that.
Maybe so.
Evil. I don't even know who the guy was, but I just want Evil to run through that NXT roster. Just give everybody and everything is Evil.
So we're going to be keeping an eye on Bushiroad's business. We always do. I mean, it's part of... it's for me anyway, it's part of doing this show and keeping an eye on New Japan is to keep the parent company, because all that stuff matters. It could affect, but it hasn't yet. And it's not going to for a while. Keep in mind, like, it's going to be a long time before we find out.
The loan has to fail first. They have just gotten the loan.
Yeah, we just got the loan. So it's just something that's on your mind. And to be honest, if we had four shows that were interesting to talk about this week, this thing probably would have gotten 5 minutes at the end of it.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make this sound like a bigger deal than it is, but just because the quiet that's come from the New Japan camp this past week, it's on my mind probably more than it would be had the news come out next week when we have Red Zone and Heizen no Kuni to talk about. And so, all right, should we look at this thing? Because in these two Korakuen Hall shows, Jeremy, the Road to Dantaku was April 19th and April 20th. So that was Sunday and Monday from Korakuen Hall. And the attendance was pretty rough, but you know, you think it would be with the lineups they had. And we are not going to waste everybody's time going through these things match by match. Jeremy has some graphics.
I'm just giving you the photo because you can have an idea of what actually was there. If you see,
No. Absolutely.
Ooh, hey, maybe I'll check that one out. Sure. Here you go.
Yeah. 1,014 fans on Sunday, only 940 on Monday. And of course, that's, you know, during the week, it's not unusual for it to be down. But Jeremy, I was looking back because that's one place they had not gone.
Are you yet a historian for doing that kind of thing?
In 2026, they had not dipped below 1,000 in Korakuen until Monday for this year. Mm-hmm. And I decided to see, well, when was the last time there was a crowd that small for New Japan in Korakuen? And I was a little bit surprised to find out that it was Road to Dantaku a couple of years ago. So in 2023, they had two consecutive shows in Korakuen in January. It was the Road to New Beginning. I only bring that up because those shows only did in the 700s. And I can only...
Was that right when Kanata won the title?
I don't know. That would have been after he lost it, right? 2023? Yeah, I looked at it.
2023 is when he got it.
This is January of 2023, though, so it was coming right off of Wrestle Kingdom.
Oh, all right.
Hey, point is, those two shows were such outliers to anything else that I wonder if there wasn't a blizzard that weekend in Tokyo or something that kept people in, the weather or something like that, because they do get some severe winter storms sometimes. It's 700s, that's really out there for New Japan to go that low. But most of the small Korakuen crowds are during Road to Dantaku. I don't know whether it's because Golden Week is coming up, because it is. It's coming up the end of April into the very beginning of May. And Road to Dantaku just doesn't do well at Korakuen Hall very often. I thought that was interesting historically. Like over and over again, some of the lower attended Korakuen shows for New Japan come this time of year, April. And I wonder if it's just because people are gearing up for the holiday week. Don't know. You know, it's just a rough time.
Big stuff happened at the beginning of the month. Stuff isn't going to be happening at the end of the month.
Yeah, they just seem to be taking these off. So, anyway, the show on Sunday was completely inconsequential and unmemorable. It was a house show. It was just a house show that took place in Korakuen Hall. There were a couple of things at the Monday show. Of course, the main event was the number one contendership match for the IWGP tag team titles. And that was to see who would face the Knockout Brothers on the Saturday show that is coming up. And it was Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi against Great Okan and Hennare. Earlier in the night, I'm going to back up just a little bit because it does relate to the main event. Earlier in the night, Shingo Takagi had a match against Zane Jay. Of course, Shingo is challenging Callum Newman at Dantaku. Callum Newman faced Daiki Nagai. So matches we knew those guys were going to win because it was against what is essentially the young lion of each group, although I know Zane's gimmick is that he's not a young lion. You get the point. The lowest guy on the totem pole of the other guy's faction. So Unbound Company, Daiki Nagai is the new face on United Empire at Zane Jay. So Shingo wrestles Jay, Newman faces Nagai.
Right.
I thought they were going to do something interesting because these two matches were back-to-back. And I thought they were going to do something interesting or creative with it where Shingo and Callum might cross paths. They did not.
Nope.
They could not be bothered to do anything interesting or creative with it. But
the most interesting thing was Zane attacking Shingo as he was making eccentrics.
Yeah.
That was really the motif that they went for in that entire thing.
New Japan is going almost ECW level with the no disqualifications thing, because Zayn is now United Empire as a whole, just using chairs blatantly in front of the referee, not even trying to do distractions anymore, and just making these referees stand there and point. And
are you talking about the Great Okan Goto stuff in the main event?
Yes, that's where this all leads to. So Zane Jay just hits him with chairs, no disqualifications or anything like that. The referee just kind of gives him a couple of gestures, doesn't even bother with it. So why are we bothering with anything else? And then we get to the number one contenders match. At point, they're using chairs right in front of Red Shoes and all this stuff. And to the point that Chris Charlton had to mention on commentary that, oh, there's that long leash from Red Shoes again.
Referee's discretion.
He's thinking the same thing everybody else is. Like, why the hell isn't he just disqualifying people? They're so lazy, they don't even bother to run distractions with this stuff anymore. Then later on, they do distract Red Shoes for no reason, because they've already used the chair like three times. And then this is the part that I just started laughing. Yoshihashi got pile driven onto a chair in the middle of the ring, and he kicked out, popped up, and hit a DDT on the guy that had pile drove. Chair shots, totally ineffective. Who cares? You know, and maybe that's why they aren't disqualifying them, because they don't work in New Japan's universe anymore. Like, you get pile driven on one and it doesn't affect you. It's a two count, and then you just pop right up and start wrestling again.
The burst of adrenaline reserves in wrestling have just been upped across the board in all promotions. Because I've seen this in a number of places where somebody will take a devastating move, and before they fall to their knees or crumble, they too hit a devastating move.
So stupid.
And then both guys end up on the ground. And so stupid. From time to time, it's fine. But there are moments where it's just like, this was not the moment for that.
Allow me to do a quick baby boomer impression. I'm going to bitch about something here. I blame video games. And this is what I mean. So many people grow up playing pro wrestling video games, right? Nobody sells in a pro wrestling video game, right? So you take a move, and then you hit your buttons, and you hit your little, you know, the joystick, and you do your things, right? And you get the right combination, and then you get the next offensive move in. Your little character, whoever the hell, whether it's one you've made or you're playing as somebody or whatever, doesn't sell. It just does the offensive move like nothing else had ever happened. Maybe their lifeline or whatever, health line or something, is shorter, but it's not like the guy is over there like holding his knee or holding his back or something like that. He just pops up and does the big power bomb. People are wrestling like they're in a video game. If I am on offense, I am fine. I don't have to sell anything. And so, like, Yoshihashi takes a pile driver on a chair, kicks out of it, and then just hits a video, then just hits a DDT like nothing had ever happened. Like, why are we selling anything? And the answer is, we really aren't. We just aren't selling.
You've never had more of an okay boomer moment in my mind than just now.
But it's making these matches worse. Sure. Like, sell something, for God's sakes. Don't just pop up. And I can't stand the whole land on a German suplex, hit a German suplex, and then remember that you're hurt. It looks stupid. It just looks stupid. It looks fake. That's really what it is. There's a lot of this stuff just looks fake. Just like all the cheerleading towers that they build in tag team matches where four or five guys are in a corner and they all do the tower. That's a cheerleading. It's cheerleading. All right.
The match was good, not great, and you've actually convinced me it was bad.
Well, okay. Well, and now I'm really going to mess things up, because I'm about to say, other than that, match wasn't bad. So that was my next. That was just me on my soapbox.
Rip you shot. Talked Thank me you, into shot. Liking the match less as a result of your rant.
Sorry. He says there's a definite correlation between wrestling video games and a lack of selling. Nice observation. Yeah, everybody just kind of pops right back up, just like their character does in the video games they grew up playing. So we've got but the action wasn't bad. I mean, it's Henare. He's pretty good. Bishamon's one of the best tag teams there are. Great Okan was in this match and looked interesting.
I wanted to go to versus Henare singles match, to be honest.
Yeah, it's not bad. But in the end, Bishamon ended up getting the win. Now, this surprised both of us, right, Jeremy? Because last week we thought that United Empire seemed to have the hot hand. I'll say this, though. Bishamon versus the Knockout Brothers, probably a better match than Henare and Okan versus the Knockout Brothers would be. So while I know that New Japan loves to cut the legs out from people, but we're getting Bishamon and Knockout Brothers. At the very least, it's the better of the two matches. Although
I agree.
I think Hanare and Okan would have done something interesting. Hanare and Ice, I'm in for that. So I don't think we were a loser either way, but Bishamon Knockout Brothers, they have wrestled each other before. We were debating that. Indeed, Bishamon has beaten the Knockout Brothers in the past, but this is a title match, big main event tomorrow, or not tomorrow, Saturday, and with that one on top, and I'm looking forward to it.
This is hilariously touched on a point that I was thinking about the other day when I was wanted to make sure that I talked about this on the show. We kind of felt that, you know, it was going to be the other team that won this match. And this isn't the first time that this has happened in 2026, where quite frankly, every one of our personal booking instincts and directions that the company has wanted to go, they've gone in the completely opposite direction. And it's happened almost every single time in this year that we come on this show and we're like, you know, this would make a lot of sense if you did this. And they do the other thing. This would make a lot of sense if they do this. And then they do the other thing. What are you going
to
say?
And we're experiencing really bad crowds, so maybe they should listen to us more often.
And it's just one of those things that, like, it's the principle from The Simpsons and that meme. It's like, is it the students that are out of touch, or is it me? And it's like, oh, it must be the students.
Must be the students. Yeah, must be them. Yeah.
And the ship is going to get righted. You know, there are a lot of things that, you know, due to outside forces, you know, it's like feeling like Finley was going to be the guy that was going to come in and replace Gabe Kidd ends up being Andrade. You know what I mean? It's just one of those like, yeah, that does make more sense. And I like that. I like that a little bit more. But boy, I'm just my instinct and my foot, my finger on the pulse just does not feel like it's in lockstep with the promotion right now. And I'm hoping that'll get righted once the layout for the year becomes a little bit more like complete. You know what I mean? Like once we get to Dominion and we have a card there, and you can just kind of get an idea of what Dominion and then Forbidden Door and what G1 is going to be. Cause right now we've gotten step one, which is let's elevate Callum Newman above everything else. Let's just make this guy the guy. I'm like, okay, now that we've done that, maybe we can get a sense of how the rest of Dust is going to settle for the rest of the card. Like we've been talking about for months, it's bold to prioritize Callum Newman over everybody else in this promotion, but this is what they're doing. And now that we're doing it, maybe we're going to be able to navigate this with a little bit better sense of clarity of what the priorities of the promotion are. But this was the match where it was like, okay, I've had a moment of clarity about this. And it's just one of those, like, no matter what we think is the sensible direction of how this goes, they're just doing the other fucking thing. Just, just let's introduce chaos and see what happens.
and God forbid anybody actually gets on a winning streak and appears over. You know, they cut off.
And look,
the first thing I thought of, too, when they announced Andre the Giant, Andrade El Idolo. I tried to say them both at once. Andrade El Idolo as the opponent, the replacement opponent for Gabe Kidd, was, you know, the just looking at it and thinking, oh my god, they might have Tsuji lose both belts. They might actually have him lose both belts here. And I just thought, can you make him look like a bigger loser now than that? And I think New Japan is under a mistaken delusion that just winning the title is enough. And now you're a guy. Now you're a main event guy. Now you are made. There's nothing more we need to do for you. You have held the belt. And think if he loses to Andrade.
Not even enough
Andrade,
that he brought back a fan favorite old belt, even.
Well, that's where I'm going with this, Jeremy. So he wins both titles, right? And he says the IWGP title is for Japan, and it's for main eventing New Japan shows, and it's a New Japan championship, and I'm going to restore it to what it means to the Cerulean Blue and all that. The global title, that is for going other places and preaching the gospel of New Japan Pro Wrestling in other areas, and that's what the global title is for. But the IWGP championship, the V4 title, that is what is the core fundamentals. And what do? They might have him fail to hold either one of them. After all that talk, he's going to lose both of them. You know, and I'm not saying he's absolutely going to lose to Andrade, but he might. And just like their whole, all that yakking, all the bringing back the V4, all of the talk about how he is going to restore New Japan.
All the vibes.
And they just beat him. And he fails. The story is, again, that he makes all these proclamations. And if he loses this global title, the story is, oh, and in 5 months, he can't hold either one of them. He's not good enough to hold either one of them. What are you people doing? Like, what is, but
all buy tickets had to see him. Was, like, he just had to win. He just had to win, put him in a singles match over and over and over again to the point of, this is what you do with the heel, right? You have him beat all your favorite baby faces to the point of like, man, I can't wait until that one guy really comes in and finally takes that title away from him and makes me, and I'll feel like he's the big star now, right? That's what you do with the heel. When you have a baby face, you have him beat all comers even more than necessary so that when everybody's watching this guy, they're like, wow, man, everybody's really behind this guy. He always wins. And then when he finally loses, you're like, oh, man, it was a fluke that he lost. Not that, oh, I expected him to lose because, you know, he's just the guy after all.
Yeah.
And they've lost the step of the cement mix to solidify the guy.
And yeah, that's a very good point. And, you know, I go back in New Japan's history when the company was hot. And we can talk about the 2000, because Kenny Omega didn't lose very often. I understand that. I promise I do understand that. But Okada didn't lose very often either. These guys are losing all the time to people. And, you know, the other thing is, like, when you go way back in the days, you know, we're talking like the 70s, 80s and all that stuff that got these companies entrenched in Japanese pro wrestling, the foreign heel would be vanquished by the top guy at the end of the tour. They might mow through everybody, right? So a foreign heel, Hulk Hogan, who eventually was so popular, he wasn't really a heel anymore, but he was at first. Dick Murdoch, we mentioned Killer Karl Krupp was one of the very early New Japan villains. They would come in and they would win, but they would lose at the end to Inoki. They could always depend on Inoki to vanquish the guy. Then after that, there were other people. Got into Muto, Chono, Hashimoto and things. And they had foreign heels then too. But in the end, they would lose the big show at Sumo Hall or at the Dome to the hometown guys. So their belief in the hometown guys may be delayed, but it was rewarded. And that's what they got to get back to, is the finding people that really... But Brad mentions that at least it wasn't Jake Lee that beat him. Yeah, no kidding. I'd much rather watch... Callum Newman matches and Jake Lee matches. That is a fair point. But
every time I see Jake Lee, for whatever reason, it's the song Clowns to the Left of Me, Jokers to the Right, Here I Am, Stuck in the Middle with You. That song gets popped in my head every time I see him now.
If they can license that from Steeler's Wheel, that'd be good. But I have a feeling that because of Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, that's probably more expensive than it used to be.
But he is the clown to the left to me. And United Empire if the Joker's to the right.
The week ahead. Now, there's a lot of stuff on NJPW World. Not all of it. New Japan has a lot of events coming up. They are hitting the road hard. So April 24th, that's tomorrow, Friday, April 24th, they are in Ehime. And that is mostly a house show. But Yuya Uemura is in the main event. It's his home area, his hometown.
Is this the one where Robbie Edson is in the opener?
Yeah, and it's Wolf, Bolton, and Uemura versus Yujiro, Fale, and Ren Narita. So the match won't be very good. I mean, look at that House of Torture lineup there. Yujiro, Fale, and Ren Narita. So good luck, Uemura. And Bolton, for that matter. You know, Wolf is still learning, and my God, can we just start some sort of parliamentary motion in the Japanese government to get him away from House of Torture? But he's still stuck there and will be for a while. Saturday, April 25th in Hiroshima, we have Red Zone. That is tag team night. It's mostly a house show again underneath the multi-person tags and Young Lion matches. But the two top matches in this one, Jeremy, Robbie X and Taiji Ishimori versus Kosei Fujita and Robbie Eagles. To me, this is the best match New Japan Pro Wrestling has. And yes. Then in the main event for the IWGP heavyweight tag team titles, right up there with it. Knockout, not the first time ever. Knockout Brothers versus Bishamon. And it is Knockout Brothers defending the title against Bishamon.
Didn't we establish last week that they actually had never faced each other?
They have.
Okay. Great.
But yeah, that's so where do you see these going, Jeremy? I'm just going to ask you here. Where do you see these two matches go? Do we even want to say out loud for fear they'll just go the other direction?
Well, if TMDK wins, then I don't think Fujita is going to win the Best of Super Juniors. I didn't think he was going to win it anyways, but I think the idea is to believe that he would. So I would do a retention on this match and have the Unbound company retain. And then I would prefer retention from Knockout Brothers, but given the fact that they don't care about their young talent and keeping them strong, they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the analysis. It absolutely should be the Knockout Brothers winning this. I don't think they...
I think the match is going to be really good. Let's just get that out of the way. Like, I think, they're going to beat the crap out of each other, and it's going to be one of those matches that we're talking about, like, hey, you need to go out of your way to see this. I mean, the caliber of the talent is absolutely there. With that said, I think the general booking decisions of New Japan lead me to express caution about the match and how I'm going to feel about it rather than unqualified enthusiasm.
All right. So that's Hiroshima Red Zone. I mentioned that they're in the Southwest for a while, so most of these towns, once they get to Red Zone, are down that way. Sunday, April 26th, is a house show in Yamaguchi. That one will be on NJPW World. Monday, April 27th, they're also in Yamaguchi, another part of town, different arena. That one's not going to be on NJPW World. That is strictly strictly for the live crowd in Yamaguchi. Then back on NJPW World for Heizen no Kuni on April 29th in Saga. That is the junior heavyweight title on top, Tiger Mask versus Doki. And that is going to be Tiger Mask's final hurrah. Not long after that, by the way, I am going to start spending a little bit of time on each episode going over Tiger Mask's career, because it is starting to wind down. We're going to wait until after Heizen no Kuni and his title match, but when we're going to start one of those multi-part deals like we did for Tanahashi, might not be as long as the Tanahashi one, but I do want to give respect to Tiger Mask. I encourage everybody, go back on NJPW World if you have time and look at some mid-2000s Tiger Mask, and you'll see it. He was really good when he was younger and sprier and healthier. Was he on the level of some of the other Tiger Masks? Well, the other Tiger Masks were Satoru Sayama and Koji Kanemoto and Mitsuharu freaking Misawa. So that's about as hard a list to get on as you possibly can.
Right there.
Is he as good as those guys? No, but he's really, really good. He was really, really good. And it's worth going back and watching some of those matches. Plus, he was, which we'll get into, actually trained by Sayama, the only one that was actually trained by Satoru Sayama. So in some ways, when he was younger, he wrestled more like the original Tiger Mask than either of the other Tiger Masks did. So just something to think about. I know that right now he's kind of the old guy who doesn't move very well and loses all the time. Go back to the mid-2000s. You'll see why he's a legend. You'll see why he's considered one of the key cogs in the New Japan wheel. It was there. It was there for a while.
So when I was looking at the match lineup on New Japan 1972, I saw that we haven't really talked about this all that much. Tiger Mask is challenging for Doki, right? Mm-hmm. But Doki is the 99th junior heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
Meaning the next person to win that title is going to be the 100th junior heavyweight champion. Is that something that is going to be a big deal for New Japan, do you think? Is that like part of their plan, is to make the 100th champion like a big deal kind of thing, or is just a thing? Because they didn't really do it with the tag titles.
No.
You know, that happened recently and whatever. And, you know, I could see a babyface, but should it be an older babyface winning the 100th, or should it be a new first time? Like, 100th should be kind of a big deal.
It feels like it should be, yeah. But you're right. They glossed over it completely with the junior tag titles. They just ignored it. It was not a thing. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it should be. I mean, what do you have right now that would give the fans something to really get behind? And just the idea of someone trying to be the get that 100th mark. It's such it's such a neat round number. And I feel like it should be a thing. But they completely ignored it for the junior tag titles. I can't promise that they're going to, you know, it's
right.
But upending Doki after,
it'll have been almost a year, if not more than a year by the time that like once the best of the Super Juniors like happened, it's kind of, that'll have been around a year that he's had the title.
It seems like it ought to be a thing. It seems like it ought to be a thing, and it ought to be a big deal. It should be a big deal whenever Doki gets the throne, because in some ways you're kayfabe saving the title from the House of Torture dynamic of them refusing to defend it, and I don't want to be at Wrestle Kingdom and all this, saving the title from that and those shenanigans. That should be a big deal in and of itself, making it the 100th, and now it's back home, and now it's going to be defended on the way it should be defended. There's a story in that.
That they should take advantage of. That's the kind of stuff that gets people invested in, like, the promotion, not some of these weird stories that they're
deciding. I'll bring this up, and I'll bring this up just as somebody who's almost certainly not going to get a lot of votes for Super Junior winner. But watch out for Master Wato, because thinking about how did Master Wato debut when he came back from Mexico? He was attacked by Doki his very first night. And then that was his first feud. Those two have been linked. Remember, Doki said that part of the reason he joined House of Tortures, he could not be in a faction with Master Wato. And when he saw Taichi and the rest of the guys join up, he said, this is revolting. I can't do this. And he mentioned Desperado also.
Yeah. Betrayed by the fact that they all joined a faction he wanted nothing to do with. He's like, I'm joining House of Torture. Screw you guys.
Well, that was part of it, right? Because they were trying to figure out a justification for why the hell he did it, which was it was weak, but it was there. And these two have been inextricably linked, really, all of Wato's career. He's been tormented by Doki in some kind of way. So, you know, look out for that as an underdog pick for Super Juniors because of that story, the idea that I can be the one that
he could be one of the upset wins for Doki. Are they in the same block? I don't even know.
I think so.
We're previewing in a couple weeks. I've not done heavy analysis of the best of the Super Juniors. I apologize, everybody.
Yeah. So just something to think about, folks. That Wato and Doki have a long history. But yeah, so that's what's going on this week. So I mentioned Heizen no Kuni. That's going to be on Wednesday. And so that's the junior heavyweight title match. And then after that, it's still going. I mean, like all the way until not all of it's going to be on NJPW World, but then we come up to the two night Dontaku event in Fukuoka. So that they're bringing Místico in for that one.
Yeah.
There are a couple things, some weird stuff like Takeshita and Shota Umino as a tag team. So they are sprinkling some stuff on the underneath parts of these cards to bring a little more interest. The stuff on top, we've got the big title matches. That's going to take care of itself. But I appreciate, Jeremy, that they're doing little things like Místico. And I mentioned the weird odd couple tag team and things. Right. Just so that the first half of the card isn't totally perfunctory.
So next week we preview Dontaku.
Yes.
The week after, we recap Dontaku and a New Japan Road. And we're also previewing Best of Super Juniors because the week after, Thursday the 14th, is actually the first day of the Best of the Super Juniors. So we're in it now.
We are. And as Brad mentioned,
the last of the quiet shows.
CMLL announced Fantasticomania in Mexico with New Japan and Stardom. And that has become one of their bigger shows in that it's not part of the $10 tier. Like when you have the $10 tier on YouTube, you get the Friday shows on a 10-day delay. And that's what I have currently. So I get the Friday shows 10 days after they happen. And I get a couple other shows throughout the week live, but that Fantasticomania one, and Leyenda's, the Legends show, the anniversary show. The only way you can see those is to go up to the Legends tier. So they are essentially $30 pay-per-views is really what that is. And Fantasticomania has become one of those. So they're building that up in CMLL quite a bit too. And of course, they've brought Start Micah's been there not too long ago. FWC was there for a while. That's Hazuki and Koguma. There've been a lot of Stardom and New Japan talent, AEW talent coming into Friday nights. Just saw Místico, Kevin Knight, and Mike Bailey, as a matter of fact, on there. So, hey, Fernando Zayas was, yeah. I'm sorry you're late too, because we're not too far away from wrapping up here, buddy. yeah, but anyway, so that's going to be a big event, another New Japan thing. It's a very busy time in the schedule right now as we start kicking in this Dontaku Road 2 through Super Juniors all the way to Dominion, really. I mean, the next real kind of quiet time is going to be post-Dominion.
Not even really, because then there's Forbidden Door and then there's G1 right afterwards. So there's always like Dominion middle of June, Forbidden Door at the end of June, and then G1 is the middle of July.
Yeah, they just might not load up the house show circuit during that period, right, is what I mean. So it won't be like four shows a week. There'll be consequential ones, but that's usually when they ease off the house show circuit. And
they're gonna try to get healthy before the G1 right now.
Yeah, exactly. Bumps, bruises,
all the heavyweight guys, they're gonna get whatever rest and rehabilitation they need, and then, you know, end of May, back to it.
So when the juniors can chill finally after they have their run, so the junior heavyweights can take a G1 time off. So, all right, so we will be back next week to take a look at the Red Zone, the two tag team title matches that we are very excited about. Anything that happens in AMA or Yamaguchi that's worth mentioning, we'll bring that up, and then Heizen no Kuni, Tiger Mask final shot at the junior heavyweight title. And then Colin is asking, did we see the video of Jun Kasai, Rini Yamashita, Despy, and all that eating and drinking after competing in Vegas? So I haven't seen that yet. I'm glad everybody had a good time. But
who won $1,000? Mayu Iwatani?
No, that was Sari. Sari was playing slots in the airport waiting for her plane and hit $6,300. It's a hand pay. They don't just print you out a ticket. You got to fill out tax forms when you get up into that range. So she hit $6,300 at the airport. And Jeremy, those are considered some of the tightest slots around. Like they have a lower rate to pay out
all the time.
No.
None of them really are, but even harder than most. I get it.
$6,300 in the airport. Yeah.
Fernando wanted to know if we have any favorites for the G1. You mean like being in the G1 or winning the G1? Because I'm not going to say Yuya. I want Yuya to win the G1. But, like, I want Yuya to be facing Yoda for the title. And there's a lot of things that need to happen in order for us to be in that direction. Yeah, I'm going to go with Yuya Uemura winning the G1 this year, Fernando.
If he is not the champion, Yoda winning G1. Yeah. If he's not the champion going into it, that's who I would think right now. But again, we still have Dontaku, we still have Dominion, so things might become a little more clear as we get early. But right now, sitting here on April 23rd, I would say Yoda Tsuji, unless he has regained the championship. If he regains the championship, then no.
It would be wild if it wasn't Yoda Tsuji challenging Callum Newman at Dominion, and it was somebody else who won the title off of him, and then all of a sudden, like, we have a brand new, like, native Japanese talent that is the IWGP champion at Dominion, filmed on TV Asahi and going into the G1, and then he's got to be protected as, like, the top talent that can't lose all the time. Wow, this is going to be wild.
We got a long way to go until that.
We have a destination. We have a destination for the end of summer with a lot of twists and turns on that mountain road to get there.
We'll be covering all of them right here on the show. So when we come back next week, like as I mentioned, Red Zone, Heizen no Kuni, and then we will be looking ahead to a two-night wrestling Dontaku in Fukuoka. So that will be a pretty full show right here next week. So we're going to wrap it up here for now on a quiet week for New Japan Pro Wrestling. I want to thank Brad. I want to thank Fernando for coming in. Colin, definitely glad you're here. Jeremy Orr, glad you could join us as well. And anybody else that did, we're grateful for your time. Whether you're watching us live here on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe. That really does help. People say that all the time. It really does help. And then for the folks there listening later on a podcast, we're grateful for your time for sure. And we will be back next week. So for Jeremy Finestone, I'm Stephen Conway. This has been Speaking of Strong Style, and we will talk to everyone again real soon.
This episode sponsored by She's Birdie. Every woman knows the feeling, that quick glance over your shoulder in a parking lot, the moment you grip your keys a little tighter walking home. That's exactly why She's Birdie created Birdie 3.0, a personal safety alarm designed by women for women. Just pull the pin and Birdie sounds a loud, attention-grabbing siren. We are talking as loud as a jet engine at 100 feet to help deter danger and alert people nearby. And the new Birdie 3.0 is even better. It's rechargeable, includes a built-in flashlight, and features an on and off switch, so it activates only when you want it to. No embarrassing false alarms. It's small, non-violent, travel safe, and easy to clip to your keys, bag, or backpack, so it's always within reach. It's also super cute and comes in tons of colors to match basically any outfit, so you actually want to have it on you, because everyone deserves to feel safer. Learn more and get your Birdie 3.0 today at cheesebirdie.com.
This episode sponsored by Good Ranchers. Good Ranchers delivers 100% American meat straight to your door. Every cut is sourced from local U.S. farms and ranches, and the entire packaging and fulfillment process takes place right here in America before it's delivered to your doorstep. No imports, ever. Just high-quality, 100% American beef, chicken, pork, and wild-caught seafood. I'm a subscriber, and my plan is incredibly easy to manage. Traveling? Need to skip a delivery? You can pause, move, or adjust your order anytime in just a few clicks. Right now, when you start your plan, you'll get free meat in every box for life, plus $25 off your first order with code RANCH25. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use code RANCH25 to start your Good Ranchers plan today.